All right, here's a warning for you. This podcast contains sexuality and language. Listener discretion is advised, but you probably knew that because it's literally called, get this, Sex with Stone. I hope you enjoy the show, darling.
Check one. My voice, I sound like, I don't know, what was it, Duke Silver?
Yes, the there soothing sounds of Duke Silver.
Duke Silver. So how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
All right.
I wanted to talk about something.
Okay.
Because I think it's interesting. So I don't know if anybody has noticed. I'm sure all of our audiences have, obviously. the Elizabeth Stone Facebook page, Sex with Stone, is still on. Elizabeth Stone page is deleted and gone forever now.
Too many sausage pictures.
So many. So what happened was, how long ago was that? It was in the winter, wasn't it? I think. And so like Elizabeth Stone was just like living, I'm talking in the third person. So I was just like using that site because you needed to attach a name to the Sex with Stone account, right? And so I was like, oh, I'll create like an Elizabeth Stone account. That's fine. And then I did, and it was, everything was going well, and you know, whatever. I was able to like promote things and whatever. And then all of a sudden I started getting like, because the page was open, right? And it was fine. But then I started getting like, I don't know, I had like some friend requests, you know, and they were people that I didn't know. And I'm like, yeah, for sure. Because I'm using that website or that page as a way to promote our podcast. So I remember having that conversation with you about like, what do I do? Like, do I just like, how do I do this? Right. Because I accepted the friend requests, and then the next day there was like 15, and then it was like 20, and I was getting like spammed so hard, and I've never been spammed before. So this was really interesting, to me. And so I made like this generic thing that was like, hello and welcome to the Sex with Stone website. Have you heard of us? Here, you can check us out on Spotify, on Apple Music. And I like put the links up, right? And it was just literally like I would spam them like that.
Spamming the spammer.
Exactly. And then what I noticed was that like they were trying to like video call me, and they were like messaging me like, you're beautiful. And like I didn't have picture of myself on there, you know, it was like my lips or something, right? And they just kept doing that. And then I was like, I'm talking to you about it, like, what do I do? Like, I'm trying to like whatever. And you gave me the website for, what was it, for like a random face generator?
Yes.
Yeah. And so I started sending like strictly the male faces to them, because it was all men that added me, and they just kept being like, you're beautiful, like let me see. And then they would start sending me dick pics that I did not ask for. So then my plan of attack was I would screenshot the dick pic of one person and send it to another. And I was trying so hard to like be like, you're gonna show me yours, I'll show you mine, like here's another dick that I got, you know. And it didn't stop. They still kept trying to like call and stuff, and I'm like, how is this not, they're not real people. But it just got to the point where it was exhausting, and I had to shut that down. It was too many dicks coming at me.
Too many dicks on the Facebook.
too many dicks. Too many misters, not enough sisters. Yeah. So I don't know. Like I've never been spammed before. And the fact that they were so, like, I don't know, like, were they robots? Like, I'm literally sending you a picture of a dick and you're trying to video chat me. I don't know. What do you think? Like, what was that?
I have no idea.
Was it a robot?
Probably. Seems something automated. And I don't know. Maybe somebody has a random dick pic generator, like a random face generator.
That'd be awesome. But then why the video chats?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's the same reason why you get phone calls from Bangladesh and Saudi Arabia. Maybe it's that sort of thing to check to see if they can confirm you're an actual person. I don't know.
Yeah, so that's what happened, because I know people are extremely worried about what happened to Elizabeth Stone on Facebook, and the dicks happened.
It was just dicks.
And there was no stopping. It was non-stop dick. And
that's the problem. It was just a poor allocation of the capitalist market. There was just too much supply of dick pic, not enough demand, and that's why they're all worthless.
Something had to go.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So we know who you are, and I am Richard Bigley.
Hey!
Hey!
And this is Sex with Stone. Episode 16.
Nice.
Yeah.
16.
Sweet 16.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we should have had a little champagne.
We still could.
We still could.
Yes.
It's true. At another episode.
Or after, whatever, day drinking. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. Where was I?
What are you going to talk about today?
I should start.
It's your turn. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can just start. It's okay.
Okay.
I don't mind.
All right. So feminism, as defined by Google, is the advocacy of women's rights on the basis of equality of the sexes. The very same Google defines pornography as printed or visual material containing the explicit description or display of sexual organs or activity intended to stimulate erotic rather than aesthetic or emotional feelings. So there's been some debate in feminist circles.
Question.
Yes.
Do you consider yourself a feminist?
I do.
Okay.
Yes.
That was all.
That's it?
Yeah.
Well, now they know a little bit more about me.
That's right.
That's right. So there's been some debate in feminist circles for decades.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, the last 50 years or so, as if pornography can be feminist. So like in the 1970s, this debate was, you know, generally around if it was even possible to produce feminist pornography.
Yeah.
Some argued it was possible, but it just hasn't been made. Others said that it was possible, but they haven't seen any examples of it. And then, of course, a third group, consisting of like feminists such as Andrea Dworkin, just saying that it's just simply not possible.
Well, and to be honest, right, there is so much pornography out there that is directed to men.
I would say like probably 99% of it.
Yeah. Is, so like yeah. Even the videos, that you would think would be, for not like they are. They mm-hmm. are. You can tell by the like the aggression in them. The dominating effect that one member, regardless whether it's going to be like a same-sex video that you're watching or
mm-hmm.
not, but it's all about like there's like a dominating effect into it where one person is more aggressive, and there's always like this weird like step parent thing, this babysitter thing, this boss
power
thing.
Fantasy thing.
Yeah. Or like or even the this having sex with a straight person thing too. Like these are all like common things where like the person is like kind of like manipulated in a way into doing it as mm-hmm. opposed to like,
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so these attitudes, you know, specifically when this debate kind of opened up in the 70s, mm-hmm. you know, certainly there was that as sort of the prevailing attitude, you know, that pornography was only for, or like generally vastly, you know, cis male centric. And I think I got some friends who were kind of starting out their careers back in the 70s. And, you know, they kind of described their workplaces to me as well. Like, for example, they would walk in on men, their coworkers, watching pornography on company audiovisual equipment while they were working. Yeah, like they would be watching.
Just like lunchtime?
Yeah, just lunchtime, and a bunch of the men go into the room or whatever, and they just watch porn and eat their lunch or go do work.
That's so, I don't understand that. I remember being at some parties when I was younger where they would have it on, like in the background, like the living room TV would have mm-hmm. it on, and I always made me feel really gross. Like I didn't understand why.
Well, and I mean, it's not just limited to that. Like you've got like, yeah. you know, lewd calendars and, you know, stuff like that, that would be hung up around the office.
Yes, that's right. You know. Garages, like, and especially like stereotypical you know, male dominated. Yeah. yeah.
So, I mean, basically shit, you know, the shit wouldn't fly in today's workplaces. And I mean, it certainly shouldn't have flown then either, but it did for, mm-hmm. for a lot of it. So, I mean, and I don't want to dismiss that as, you know, this was just simply a different time. Because, I mean, to me, framing it like that kind of erases the work that people were doing in that time to kind of push back against, you know, against that, you know. Again, I'm not some prude against pornography. I'm just, you know, it's a workplace.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
people
for
need
sure.
to feel safe. People need to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, like, and I guess, like I said, framing it as a different time just seems like an erasure of people who were pushing back, often at times detriment to themselves personally and professionally. You know, you don't, well, this person's always complaining about my calendar. Well, we don't promote them, or we look for the quickest way to get them out the door,
yeah.
you know. And so today, I mean, I would say that it also holds true that, you know, pornography is still vastly male-centric. Much of it is, you know, like I said earlier, depicting that male power fantasy, mm-hmm. you know, marketing to the cis male demographic. You know, you don't have to browse YouPorn or XHamster, RedTube, or any of the other porn sites for very long before you know, to find examples of, you know, the boss, you know, and the secretary,
yep.
you know, that kind of thing.
Yep, for sure.
And, you know, much of it is simply geared towards male satisfaction, you know, boom, cum shot, scene ends, and, you know, that's it, you know, on the face or on the, you know, somewhere else on the actress, you know, and basically as far as the male is concerned, it's done, it's over, scene done.
Yeah,
know.
Yep.
Porn actress Candida Royale actually speaks to this, saying, "They all have at least one girl-on-girl scene, fellatio, cunning lingus, anal sex, double penetration, and group sex. The camera angles and the yeah. way it's shot, they have to show things as grotesque and graphically as possible. Cunning lingus looks like open-heart surgery. The money yeah. shot is always the external cum shot, and it's like your typical bad sex, no imagination, and it's always over when the man comes."
Yeah.
Yeah. That said, in a 1976 issue of Quest, which was a feminist magazine that I was able to find a copy of on the Internet Archive, Deb Friedman and Lois Yankowski had argued that, quote, "The actual incidence of rape and other violent acts against women is rising. We feel that the media's casual attitude towards violence not only reflects this increase, but is a contributing factor. The media confuse violence and sex by constantly depicting brutality and domination as forms of sexual gratification. At the same time, women are portrayed as liking violent or forced sex. In the absence of more positive portrayals of sexuality, violence becomes increasingly tolerated as normal sexual expression." They do go on to note that their concerns are not intended to censor acts conducted by consenting participants. So if you like domination and submission, hey, you know, if everyone's into it, go right on. And, you know, their comments don't apply to that.
No, it's just also, though, from what I'm taking away from that is also, like, how that's being interpreted in the real world, too, right? Like, so people watch porn and have this, like, no means yes mentality and mm-hmm. go out into the real world and try to emulate what they're seeing, and that's rape, right? Mm-hmm. And I watch a lot of porn where people are being choked, so I'm gonna choke the next person because that's kind of what I'm into, and not understanding or learning the proper way of doing it, or mm-hmm. not getting proper consent, whatever, right? Like, and that's where it becomes a huge issue.
Yeah. And part of that was written sort of in response to a film called Snuff, which was, I guess, one of the more extremely violent portrayals of sex in pornography.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
You know, and there was kind of a debate around that film, and that was kind of what spurred the writing. One solution of several proposed to address the portrayal of violence and domination of women was, quote, "There is a possibility of developing our own feminist pornography, that is, non-sexist erotica. We have set out some guidelines for determining what forms of explicit sex should be portrayed as alternatives to the current violence and sadomasochism. Now, although it may sound far-fetched, developing feminist pornography would help demonstrate what some of these alternatives could be."
Yep.
So make porn feminist, you know, women, you know, or I guess female centric, you know, pornography.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. I watched a documentary on my headphones. Sorry. I watched a documentary on the porn industry, and because amateur porn is such a huge thing right now, the people, like the women that are being that are stars in them, mm-hmm. they have such a short period of time. So they try to create as many videos as they can, basically, before they're not amateur, before they can't right. be seen as amateur anymore or whatever, right? And there's, like, a lot of, and then, of course, like, once you don't do that, and if you don't have, like a good follower base, then your rate goes down mm-hmm. per video. And so it can actually cause, like, some of the women were having, like, not an ulcer, but, like just from, like, so much penetrative sex that they were developing, like, lumps.
Like, in other health issues.
In their, yeah. So, like, I felt so bad because you feel that, from what the documentary was showing, like, that you'd have such a limited amount of time, so you want to get as much in there and make as much money as you can, right? While the going's good, basically, and just, like, how it actually does, and people take advantage of that.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing is that there's not the same laws in every state or province, and so they always film in a certain state because you can do it without a condom because condoms aren't sexy or whatever,
mm-hmm.
apparently. So, like, there's things like that as well to play into that actually are, like, that can be really considered, like, anti-feminist, right? If you're forcing someone to do this and mm-hmm. it's anti, like, oh, no, well, you can't wear a condom with this person, like, that's just dangerous too, right? Like,
exactly.
Oh, it's not appealing to the eye. Well, mm-hmm. you know, but you have to have respect for the people that are the performers, the actors mm-hmm. too, right? So
yeah. Deborah Cameron, in her paper "Discourses of Desire," discusses, I guess, what one would expect to see. So in the paper, she writes, "Changing conditions of porn's production and consumption over time have modified the nature of hardcore porn itself. in particular, as video technology has brought movies into the private space of the home, where women as well as men are watching, the movies have had to accommodate much more to the desires and concerns of women. Most obviously, there has been a lessening of overtly expressed misogyny and violence, and an upgrading of production values, extending the thesis that porn has had to change with the times. So, you know, I mean, it's an older paper, but still, you know, you think like in terms of like the 1980s when, you know, VHS tapes were coming out to people's homes now. And so, you know, instead of, you know, private viewings or whatever, you need special equipment to obtain, mm-hmm. you know, the movies. You know, you could just get them brought into the home and you could watch them on the TV in the living room or in the bedroom or wherever you want to watch them. And so because there was, you know, that, you know, it wasn't just a man going to a theater to watch now. It right. was, you know, well, his wife's in the room with him now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can't have that overt misogyny because that's not going to work if the, you know.
But I argue that there still is.
I mean, there certainly still is.
Absolutely. Yes. If what we are given mm-hmm. is less misogyny than what they had, I would be terrified to see what the porn in the 70s was, because I find that the current state of pornography is still all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was worse, much worse than it is today, as even though today is certainly not the high bar that one would be, you know, like it's still bad today.
And
but
to be honest,
not.
Like I've never seen mm-hmm. a porn from the 70s, so maybe I need to take a look-see.
All right. Yeah. In 1984, Candida Royale, who I mm-hmm. referenced earlier, had set out to broaden the appeal of pornography and founded Femme Productions. The goal was to make, you know, pornographic media highlighting female desire, as well as pornographic films aimed at helping couples, like going through couple therapy. And so her productions are aimed more towards women and couples than you would expect in a standard, you know, or the usual run-of-the-mill pornographic movie, you know, sort of geared solely towards men. So the productions of the studio have been praised by counselors and therapists for depicting healthy and realistic sexual activity. Protagonists are real-looking women with real-looking breasts. Condoms are always used unless the actors are actually a real-life couple. Mm-hmm. And the characters have, you know, career goals and are balancing real life issues alongside their, you know, sexual activity. You know, like normal grown ass adults.
Yeah.
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 And what company was that?
Femme Productions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that company still, because that was in the 80s. So like, is that company still active, still making videos, still?
I think their total catalog came out to about 15 different films.
Okay.
Candida had died a couple of years ago as well. So I'm assuming that the studio either was long gone by then or likely went with her. But yeah.
Well, it's too bad that they only made that many.
But there's others who mm-hmm. are kind of, you know, it's a very modest movement.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, now we have 15, you know, films, whereas before we had zero.
Yeah.
You know, and other people have, you know, other studios and other organizations have kind of stepped up, you know, kind of off of this model.
Yeah.
So these films were produced and directed by women. But we're still, you know, and I guess one of the criticisms is they're still confined by the genre of pornography. So, for example, heterosexual sex is still seen as a solution to problems faced by the characters. But, I mean, like I said, it was sort of a representation of, you know, some change in attitude and the change in production.
And that's the thing. If you're, as a woman, if you're going into a male-dominated occupation or anything, right, mm-hmm. you do have to conform in a sense to that.
Yeah.
To be successful. And that's just how historically how it's had to be. So
yeah.
That makes sense.
Caroline Blanton, who's writing for Tufts Observer, which is the student newspaper at Tufts University, wrote an article and set out a series of guidelines for feminist pornography. Number one, performers of all genders in feminist pornography must be treated as equals. So this includes compensation, health benefits, such as access to STI screenings, contraceptives, explicit consent from both actors before, during, and after a scene, as well as equal weight to both performers' sexual pleasure during the scene.
Mm.
So that's one. I guess that's sort of the foremost one, is that, you know, it's got to be equal.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just for him, you know.
Yeah.
The second guideline is that emotional context for sex must be provided through filming, editing, and acting of the scene. So the idea that sex isn't just something that just happens, but that there's like a healthy consensual sex, you know, that it's something that people do together, you know, and that also includes, you know, queer sex as well.
I was going to ask. Yeah. I was going to ask. Okay, good.
Yeah. So yeah, it's supposed to portray healthy consensual relationships. It's not just, you know, oh, look, I'm a pizza delivery guy and I, oh, you've answered the door and you're just in a towel. Oh,
yeah.
You know, that sort of thing, you know, where sex just happens. No, yeah. There's got to be, you know, that context behind it as well. And feminist porn is porn that strives to accurately depict a wide spectrum of human sexuality and challenges the stereotypes of women and marginalized communities often presented in mainstream porn, as the third point. The cover graphic of the article I read actually includes a mostly nude woman in front of a computer saying, "Hey, wanna see me have hot, reciprocal, consensual sex in which everyone's needs are communicated and met?" Yeah, so there's actually also a Feminist Porn Awards held annually in Toronto, which is funded by a sex toy business called Good For Her. The awards are in the shape of butt plugs.
Adorable.
Yes. And in Europe, based on this film festival in Toronto, they have developed their own as well in Europe. They call it the Poor Yes Award, and that's held every second year. It's called Poor Yes because it's a play on an anti-pornography campaign that was called Poor No.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, it's a play on the words, eh? Porno, yes. Number of actresses also consider their pornography as an expression of their feminism. So Joanna Angel, founder of Burning Angel, who had been inducted into the Adult Video News Hall of Fame in 2016, stated that, quote, "I don't make porn that I don't want to watch, and I don't like it when women look like they aren't enjoying themselves. That's my own personal way of making feminist porn." So, you know, this is a fairly recent example of, you know, porn production, you know, with a lot of those feminist traits and you know, women, you know, centric, you know.
Yeah, for films. Sure.
And, you know, again, you know, just, you know, like I said, there was 15 films that one studio made, the Femme Productions.
Yeah.
And it sort of, you know, kind of helped push attitudes in a way, you know, kind of more to, you know, towards this, like, for example, Joanna Angel. Actress April Flores, in the wrote, I guess, for the feminist porn book, "I am a fat woman in control of her sexuality. To me, there are few more genuine or powerful forms of self-expression than a woman performing sex for others to watch. It is the ultimate statement of empowerment." And yeah, so I mean, well, whether porn is or can be feminist is, you know, certainly going to be debated for all of, you know, all of eternity, I will assume,
yeah.
You know, just given a broad, you know, the broad scope of what feminism entails.
Well, exactly. And like we said last week, it is an individualistic thing as well, right?
Exactly. So. There is certainly an individualism to one's feminist beliefs.
Yeah.
So, but that said, there's still a movement, you know, taking place to kind of bring equality to the scene yes. of pornography.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, that's my episode.
Well, I thought that was really good. Yeah, for sure. And I agree. Like, I think it's a very interesting thing to think about, because a lot of times when people, hear or whatever about like pornography, it's something that people shy away from. It's something that people don't really want to bring outside of their private viewing, mm-hmm. you know, regardless whether it's with a partner or not. It's nothing that's really discussed and talked about openly. And I think that kind of makes it like a place where change is slower than, because it's not in, it's not being discussed every day, and it's not being openly like analyzed, critically analyzed, right? Mm-hmm. So I do think it's an important conversation to have.
Yeah. And, yeah. you know, like, it's, like I said, it's certainly not perfect. It's certainly not
no
where we should be or where it needs to be. But, you know, there's some pushes in that direction. And so hopefully...
For sure.
You know, hopefully sometime it'll be much more, I guess, mainstream pornography that incorporates a lot of these beliefs, you know, about sexuality and, you know, queer theory and feminism into the production of this pornography.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right. Well, how can they reach you?
Well, you can reach me at richard@sexwithstone.tk.
And you can reach me at stone@sexwithstone.tk.
You can find us on Twitter at sexwithstonepod.
Do we have Twitter?
I think so.
Oh.
I keep getting notifications for it. So.
Oh, do people follow our Twitter account?
I don't believe so. Yeah. So go follow us, please. I just so we can... know that we actually have listeners.
Yeah, well, we have started receiving more likes and stuff on the Instagram, which is exciting. Official Sex with Stone. Yeah, and you can also find us on Facebook at Sex with Stone, and our Patreon account.
Yes, don't forget that sweet, sweet Patreon.
Which we have no one. That's okay.
But you can be the first for just as little as $1 a month.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening, and thank you, Do You Do Any Doodlin' Dude, for creating our theme song. Do you know that? Do you know that thing, like, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck? I want to be like, how many doodles can a doodlin' do if a doodlin' can do doodles? How much doodles can a doodlin' dude do if a doodlin' dude can do doodles? Do you doodle?
I don't.
And you can find him on Instagram, and he's lovely. Oh, my tum-tum.
All right.
All right. Tell him. Tell him what kind of week they should be having.
Well, like feminist pornography, have a consensual week.
Hey, zing.
And have a
I've been thinking. Not yet. Not yet.
You're just looking at me. I'm just like, am I supposed to say this? I'll just let you finish. You do your thing. Yeah.
So, okay.